This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about evidence of a 10,000-year-old massacre and the origins of violence in humans. But first, you foodies know that eating is an all-in sensory experience. There's the smell of a steaming bowl of soup, the sight of a chocolatey ice cream sundae, and that crispy crunch of a perfectly cooked vegetable. All the sensory delights together create the taste of a dish. But when was the last time you listened? You listened to the food close up. My next guest says that a little sonic sprinkling can enhance or deflate flavors, and we're not just talking about that sizzling steak. Dan Pashman is no stranger to composing a harmonious meal. He's the host of WNYC's The Sporkful podcast. He joins us here in our CUNY studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira.
I got a bag of potato chips. They are the noisiest thing. They got the first thing. You open the bag, then you have the... A crunk. I can't talk. So you better take over.
All right, I'll take it from here. Yeah, the noise of that package is no accident. In fact, long before we had some of the research we have now, we now know that the people who designed potato chip bags, they didn't make them noisy for the sake of the chips. They made them noisy for the sensory experience because they understood that a noisy food was better complemented with a noisy package.
Is that right?
Yes. And in fact, research has shown that if people hear that the sound of that packaging mm-hmm. being crumpled while they're eating the chips, they will think that the chips are crisper, crunchier, fresher, better, only because that sound is being played in the background.
Wow. So if you took that sound away, they wouldn't think the chip is as good.
Correct. And the effect is even magnified with the chips themselves. So this researcher, Charles Spence, who's one of my guests on the Sporkful podcast this week, he did this study with Pringles, which
right.
we'll say their brand name because it's integral to the science here, because they're uniform.
Right.
So you can control for chip variation.
Mm.
And he had people bite into a chip in front of a microphone and then alter the sound that they would hear in their ears. And what he found is that when he amplified the sound of the crunch, even if in reality it was the same,
yeah.
when he amplified the sound, people thought the chips were better.
Wow. And you're always looking for the best way to eat and about composing the tastiest spicy. Do you have an ideal soundscape for your meals? What should the soundscape when you eat?
Well, I think that like with so many things in food, it's relative. I think there are different soundscapes for different meals. There's a famous chef in London, Heston Blumenthal, who has taken a cue from Charles Spence's research. And when you order his seafood dishes at his restaurant in London, he brings you an iPod. And you put the headphones on and you listen to sounds of the ocean and the waves crashing and the seagulls as you eat your shellfish. And the research shows that that does help to enhance the experience.
So do you foresee that restaurants might be pairing this now in this age, food with sound?
I think it makes a lot of sense. And I hope that they'll also, in the opposite direction, sometimes they're pairing the wrong kind of sound with food. So we see more and more restaurants now, they put a lot of focus into the music they're going to play. That's part of the identity or the ambiance, but often the music is very loud. And research shows that when you're surrounded by a very high decibel level, your taste perception goes down. So loud music means the food will have less flavor. It also works the same on an airplane, where you have a high decibel level, and that's one of the reasons why you get less taste perception on an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a chocolate bar sitting in front of me.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
We're going to conduct a taste test, right?
This is an experiment live on the air on Science Friday.
All right, what should I do here?
And I should say to listeners at home, you can do this at home right now with coffee. If you don't have dark chocolate handy, grab your mug of coffee. Here's what I want you to do, Ira.
Yeah.
I want you to take a bite of that chocolate and really hold it in your mouth and savor it. Or listeners at home, you're doing your coffee.
Okay.
And I want you to really note how sweet or bitter it tastes. Concentrate on how sweet or bitter the flavor is and really kind of give it a rating in your head.
Mm-hmm.
How sweet or bitter is it?
Okay, I'm doing that now. Let me tell you what rating is.
No, just mm-hmm. get it in your head.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, so keep that chocolate in your mouth. Continue to think about how sweet or bitter it is. And now we're going to play some background music.
Hmm.
What do you think?
You know, it was distracting a little bit
okay.
from the taste, but it didn't taste as sweet.
Okay, possibly more bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you still have a good amount of chocolate
mm-hmm.
in your mouth? Okay,
mm-hmm.
So listeners at home, if you're out of chocolate or if you need more coffee, take another sip, fill your mouth, think again about how sweet or bitter it tastes,
mm-hmm.
and now listen to this.
more pleasant. It's a more pleasant experience. Tastes a little sweeter.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Why? What's going on here?
Well, as Charles Spence explains it, basically, when you have a food like a dark chocolate or a coffee that has a lot of varying and complementary or even contrasting notes like sweetness and bitterness, it can be hard for your brain to make sense of it all and to latch on to something. And these different pitches of sound and of music sort of act as ways to highlight certain features of a food. It's kind of like, you know, if you're drinking a glass of wine and some wine expert says, oh, don't you taste the notes of asparagus? Well, you know, now, of course, you taste it as soon as he says that.
Right.
It's a similar kind of function. And he actually explains that it all goes to this idea that we'll play a clip from him on the Sporkful podcast of the way the mind and taste work together.
The whole idea of taste and flavor is a construction of our mind. It is all kind of an illusion that we think we taste food in our mouth, when in fact most of the interesting stuff is happening in our nose. So flavors and tastes and flavors are full stop, kind of, you know, an illusion. And if I think about things like, there are certain smells that you will describe as sweet. Things like caramel and vanilla and maybe strawberry. Smells do not actually have a taste, but I can use those sweet smells to almost trick your brain into tasting sweetness that isn't there.
You can do that. And we've heard that, and he's backing up the idea that smell is a very important part of tasting.
Absolutely. And I'm just generally fascinated with this idea that so much of what we perceive to be happening in our mouths is actually happening in our brains.
And sound can come in handy when you're cooking too. If you listen to your food, you can tell if you've made a mistake, I understand.
Yeah. Has this ever happened
food
to you,
preparation,
Ira?
Yes.
You ever throw a piece of meat into the pan and you don't hear any sound and you kind of feel like you hear a wah, wah. It's not the sound you wanted to hear because you didn't hear a sizzle.
Right.
You know, that's...
You have to turn on the heat.
You have to turn it on and turn it on high so you get that sizzle going. But also in this episode of the Sporkful podcast, I talked to Kenji Lopez-Alt, who's the food science guru from Sirius Eats. And he took me into the test kitchen there. And he told me this great story. His first job in a fancy restaurant, he was like the bottom of the barrel prep chef. And he had to cut chives for 45 minutes straight for every station in the restaurant. And after 45 minutes of slicing chives... The chef, the head chef of the restaurant, walks by and stops and says, "You're cutting those wrong." She wasn't looking. She didn't look. She could tell that he was cutting them wrong just by the sound he was making when he was cutting. So first, let's play the sound of the wrong way to cut scallions, and then we'll describe what's happening. Sounds like a chopping.
Yeah, like an axe almost.
That's right. What's happening there is that it is a chop. It's straight down, and you are essentially crushing plant cells. And that creates a chemical reaction that releases lacrimators, which are the things in an onion that make you cry.
But don't you want that reaction, that taste, the full taste, to mix those together?
I think most people prefer a little bit of that pungency of the onion, but also with its natural sweetness.
So you don't get that if you crush it.
Right. If you crush it, you get too much of that pungency. So what you want to do instead, rather than chopping straight down and crushing, you want to slice very smoothly and gently in a horizontal way so that you crush as few plant cells as possible. The sound should be almost imperceptible, but listen very closely.
Yeah. You know, there's almost a mindfulness about it, you know, where you are focused on that and you're going to make the cut just right. And you're enjoying the whole experience by being mindful of what you're doing at that moment.
Totally. And that's something that I think definitely enhances the eating experience. And because sound is sort of the forgotten sense in eating and cooking, if you force yourself to focus on that thing you don't normally focus on, I think you'll get more pleasure out of the eating experience and also be more focused and sort of... I find cooking to be a great way to relax, a sort of decompression. And when you're really focused on just the sound the scallions are making, I find it very peaceful.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, if you do think about it, and I'm thinking about it as we're speaking, there are a lot of sounds that go on when you're preparing food. Even this, the sound of a wooden spoon on the pan is very soothing, I think, in an idea. It's like homey. Comfort food.
Very much. Sometimes I get frustrated when my wife uses a metal spoon to stir things in a metal pot. I think now that you say that, I realize that part of it is it's like a nails on the chalkboard sound to me. It's whereas the wooden spoon is a homey sound. The metal sound just sounds abrasive.
Well, I'm going to guess that you're not crazy about people sitting down, eat dinner, and then their phone. They're on their phone all the time, right?
No, absolutely. I did a piece a while back about eating alone. I did for Valentine's Day. And I interviewed Deepak Chopra about sort of mindfulness. And he talked about focusing on what you're eating and putting away the distractions and really using all of your senses. And right after I spoke to him, I went out and got a slice of pizza. And it was one of the best slices of pizza. I didn't look at my phone. I really took time to feel the pizza in my mouth, to feel it going down into my stomach, and to look closely at it. I can still picture in my head the little droplets of oil on the surface of the cheese and these little tributaries of sauce flowing down the slice of pizza.
Yeah.
And it just
paid attention.
Oh, yeah. That was good. I call that total pizza awareness.
Well, I'm sure marketers and companies are really interested in this kind of stuff, right? I mean, how can sound be used beyond just selling us more stuff?
Right. Although, interestingly, that's one of the slightly controversial points of Charles Spence's research, is that a lot of his research is to help corporations sell their things more effectively. And there are some in his field who have criticized him for not delving more deeply into understanding the why on a neurological level and just sort of coming up with these clever takeaways.
Have any exercises that we could do to be more aware of sound while we're preparing food? Just be quiet and turn the TV off, turn the cell phone off, and listen to the sound.
Well, I'll give you one more quick one. If you have a chocolate bar handy from our previous experiment, you can also learn a lot about a chocolate bar by the sound it makes when you break it in half. That's a pretty good sound.
Yeah.
You want a thud. You want a deep, strong noise with a bit of bass to it. You don't want a thin sound, and that is an indication of how well tempered the chocolate is, because when you make chocolate, there are different crystal forms that it can take, and the more desirable ones will make a lower sound.
All right, Dan, those are great ideas about cooking. And if you're still hungry, you can subscribe to Dan Pashman's The Sporkful podcast on iTunes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ira.
And we also have our taste test you could try yourself. It's up on our website at sciencefriday.com/foodsound.